From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
I have received a message from His Excellency the Governor-General recommending, in accordance with Section 56 of the Constitution, an appropriation for the purposes of Appropriation Bill No. 1, 2021-2022, and I call the Treasurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I present the Appropriation Bill No. 1, 2021-22, and the Explanatory Memorandum.
And I call the Treasurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Australia is coming back.
The Morrison government had its purse strings wide open in Tuesday's big spending budget. Treasurer Josh Frydenberg said it was not time to move to the next stage of the economic strategy, the stage of fiscal consolidation and the paying down of debt. The money tree budget has led some on the right of politics to be highly critical, feeling that the government has abandoned the coalition's usual economic priorities. On the other side of the spectrum, the budget has squeezed the political room that Labor has as it prepares for the election, which on Wednesday Scott Morrison reaffirmed would be next year. In this podcast, we speak first to Simon Birmingham, who has done his first budget as Finance Minister, and then to Jim Chalmers, who is the Shadow Treasurer. We start with Senator Birmingham. Simon Birmingham, there seems to have been a change in the tone this week about the virus. The Prime Minister and the Treasurer are talking up the dangers more intensely as they justify this large spending budget. This is rather different from recent months when the emphasis was on living with the virus. What's changed?
Well, the international outlook has certainly changed in recent months. We've seen the terrible human toll in India and what that is doing now in surrounding countries and indeed other countries around the world facing challenging times from a health perspective. Economically, we've seen Europe go into a double-dip recession now and facing its own economic challenges and many other nations struggling to get the type of economic recovery that Australia has been enjoying. And all of that is why, you know, this budget starts with the premise of how we keep Australia on track in delivering our plan to keep people safe in their lives from COVID, but also safe economically in terms of their jobs, their businesses, and ensuring that we can keep the economic recovery going.
If all goes as the budget predicts, will the next budget be the time to start repair? And if not then, when? What benchmark replaces the last one for moving to the next stage, which of course was unemployment being comfortably under 6%?
I think we can now see that what will be an important driver of fiscal sustainability over the long term is about keeping employment as close to that full employment theoretical figure as possible, which means driving unemployment below 5% into the future, holding it at those levels, seeing strong growth across the economy and the type of recovery and wages growth that you would hope to see with operating closer to full employment levels. Now, that is ultimately all going to require a sustained period of effort in terms of growing the economy, and it's why last night's budget has both a mix of immediate actions, such as some of the extension of tax measures to encourage Australians to invest and particularly to encourage business investment, but also then other shifts, the increased investment in skills that has longer term benefit, and some of the particular shifts in niche areas like the establishment of the patent box to really drive the commercialisation and even manufacturing of innovation that occurs in Australia.
Just on full employment, what is the new level considered to be full employment these days?
We're looking at the evidence from the Reserve Bank and the Treasury in the Nauru as they produce and assess it. They now see that figure that starts to trigger stronger wages growth as being closer to 4.5%. Obviously, they acknowledge it's not a precise science or estimate that occurs there, but it's why we are stepping up and doubling down efforts in our plan to grow employment even further off of what is already a record high of Australians in jobs, a remarkable statistic if you think about what people were expecting 12 months ago.
We always, after budgets, have a column of budget cuts, and this year it's a very short column, hardly exists indeed. Did you make any effort at tidying up programs, or was the priority just not to offend anyone? And as Finance Minister, surely this particularly is your task, to look for some savings in the budget.
We are always cognizant of how we make sure that we have efficiency across government spending, that programs are fit for purpose in delivering the objectives that we set out for them. Now, we've had a long period in which we've been able to assess a lot of different programs over different years and change some of the policy settings within those programs through those years. In this budget, the priorities have been, first and foremost, keeping Australia safe. Secondly, growing the economy and jobs for Australians. And then thirdly, delivering on promises in relation to the essential services that Australians rely on. And we did promise at the last election that we would fully fund the NDIS. We did promise that we would respond to the recommendations of the Aged Care Royal Commission. The Prime Minister did promise action in areas of suicide prevention, and last night's budget was delivery against those promises.
I think you probably promised that spending would be offset by savings, but we won't go there. Can you point me to any savings that you've made, significant savings?
So we've pursued savings in relation to a new employment services model that is being deployed. We've pursued savings in relation to providing greater consistency around eligibility for particular welfare types from new migrants to Australia. So we have looked through and sought to find particular savings that do exist. There are smaller ones throughout the budget, but certainly, you know, this was a challenging budget to prepare in the environment that we're operating in. An environment where we wanted to maintain as much confidence as possible of consumer sentiment, of business sentiment, to keep driving the economy forward, but a budget also where we've been able to reduce debt compared with what was forecast in last year's budget, right across the 10-year horizon going forward, whilst still making those investments in areas like aged care, mental health and disability services.
Critics on the right of the political spectrum, who are among your base, are agitated that you've abandoned the debt fight in their eyes. What's your message to them? That you've only changed your spots for a little time, or that these old spots are more permanently out of date?
You don't manage to achieve budget sustainability and ultimately balanced budgets sometime down the track without actually maintaining and having a strong economy that has strong jobs growth. And so that this time, where we have an uncertain international environment, fragility in terms of confidence because of those global uncertainties, we need to make sure we maintain the COVID recovery. And that's what our plan focuses very centrally on, but also looks at how we invest in areas of the digital economy, in our Ag 2030 strategy, in terms of advanced manufacturing and areas of sovereign capability to set Australia up for a prolonged period of growth that will give us the best possible chance of achieving budget repair whilst also delivering those services such as safe, quality aged care that Australians expect us to deliver.
Now, there's no surplus in sight in the next decade, but do you think that events and decisions later might see that changed?
Well, we've taken an appropriately conservative approach to the budget forecasting. Once more, we have iron ore prices projected to track down towards $55 per tonne. We've been cautious in relation to the speed at which we see unemployment gains being made, a little bit more cautious than the Reserve Bank in their outlook. And that's been recognised by some of the international ratings agencies today, who have expressed confidence in the cautious approach that we've taken to those budget assumptions. Clearly, if we manage to exceed expectations, if there are some assumptions that prove to have an upside due to that cautiousness, well, that has the potential to improve outcomes down the track, and we will certainly do everything we can to drive an improved bottom line through faster economic growth, getting more Australians into jobs, because we've seen very clearly that is how we have the best possible chance of achieving budget sustainability. It's what we had going into the pandemic, where we had achieved record levels of workforce participation and record lows in terms of welfare dependency, and it's what we strive to recreate.
Just on those assumptions, how solid are the ones on the international border opening, which is roughly around mid next year, and the assumption about the population being vaccinated by the end of this year.
I think we've all learned through the course of the pandemic putting 100% guarantees around how the pandemic will unfold, what will happen with COVID-19 in terms of variations or mutations of it, what will happen in terms of further analysis of the vaccines and the longevity of their effectiveness, their effectiveness against different strains, all come with many uncertainties. So we have used best assumptions that we think are cautious assumptions and realistic ones, but we equally acknowledge with honesty that these are challenging times, uncertain times, and so they are just that, assumptions about when we think borders can reopen. The decision to do so will ultimately be informed by the health advice at the time and made by government only when it is safe to do so.
Just finally, have you heard from your predecessor, Matthias Cormann?
I've not heard from Matthias in recent times, but I trust that he is settling into his new role and obviously look forward to the policy thoughts of the OECD in due course.
He mightn't have been happy delivering a big spending budget.
Well, as I say, debt is actually forecast to be lower over each of the next 10 years than was the case in last year's budget.
Simon Birmingham, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thanks, Michelle.
Jim Chalmers, your central criticism of this budget seems to be that it doesn't do enough to push wages up. But if you pull unemployment down, isn't that a central way of increasing wages?
It's an important part of the story, Michelle, but it's not the full story. Getting unemployment down is obviously a very important objective. The closer we can get to full employment, the better. But the country's had an underemployment problem too for much of the last 8 long years of this coalition government, and that's part of the story too. So we need to deal with unemployment and underemployment, and we need to deal with some of the structural barriers to people grabbing the opportunities in this recovery, whether it's childcare, training, industrial relations, concentrated disadvantage and long-term unemployment. All of these things have been left to fester for too long, and that's preventing people from getting a slice of this recovery. The defining element, in my view, of the budget is even after the government spends $100 billion and racks up $1 trillion in debt, working people are still going backwards because they're copping a cut in their real wages. And that's an extraordinary admission of failure. More needs to be done to deal with the issues in the labour market so people can actually get ahead and provide for their loved ones.
But of course, there are two points here. One is that some things are outside the role of government or the control of government. And the other thing is, what more can government do, should government do?
Well, obviously, there's a role for government and there's a role for the private sector, and we've never pretended otherwise. But if the government's prepared to intervene in the economy, as they have been, and spray around what is an extraordinary amount of money, then you'd think that working people would actually get a slice of the recovery. It's amazing to think that after everything that Australians have been through, the thanks they get from their government in this budget is a cut to their real wages. That's a pretty extraordinary admission of failure. And so what we say is, we can deal with issues in industrial relations, the fact that work is not secure. There's a casualisation problem, underemployment problem, makes people's work lives precarious. We've had lots to say about that. Skills and training, the cuts to apprenticeships over 8 years haven't helped. Childcare, we've got a superior offering there. There are a range of things that government can legitimately do, responsibly do, to try and turn around these issues that we've had in the labour market, not just as a consequence of the pandemic, but for much of the last 8 years.
You talk about, you emphasise the extraordinary amount of money. Isn't the truth of the thing that the government has in fact left Labor struggling to find political space in the wake of this budget? You can really only say, do more of this, do more of that.
My view is, if you do the right thing in the budget and you get the economic settings right, so that we've got that broad and inclusive and sustainable growth where working people actually benefit from it and get a slice of the recovery, then the politics will take care of themselves. And I know that there is a political conversation about whether or not the government's tried to minimise the differences with Labor on the economy, which is pretty amazing in itself, given
Well, it has, hasn't it?
Well, it's amazing in the sense that you think about that dishonest sham campaign that they've run for 10 years that you have observed, Michelle, as closely as anyone. debt when it was a fraction of what it was, what it is now, was a disaster, and now all of a sudden it's responsible. I think their credibility has been shredded over the last 10 years, but the politics will take care of themselves. Let's get the right outcomes in the economy. Among the many deficits in the budget was a deficit of vision, and I think Labor has a role to play there to say this is how we make the economy stronger after COVID than it was before COVID, so that working people can actually get ahead in this economy and aren't held back by those stagnant wages.
But on this point about the debt argument, even if one accepts that the government overhyped debt in earlier years, you've got to admit that circumstances have changed very, very dramatically.
We've been consistent all along, Michelle, and we've said that there is a role for government, and there's a role for the budget to step in when people's livelihoods are at risk. We've been entirely consistent about that. The government's run this sham campaign for much of the last 10 years based on a big lie. And the fact that they've had to at least rhetorically shift away from that, I think, shreds their credibility. It means that you can't believe a word that they say about the economy. We've been consistent. There's a role for government when things are difficult, as they have been in the last year, as they were a little over a decade ago. But when you're spending that amount of money, it's not just the level of debt that matters, it's the quality of the spending. And this government's got a budget which is riddled with rorts and weighed down with waste. There are new slush funds in last night's budget. And that means we're not getting the bang for buck that we need to be getting in terms of jobs and other important objectives.
Well, just on the question of the actual measures, are there any measures that Labor will fight in the parliament?
Well, we're still going through the budget, as you'd expect. We go through it with a fine-tooth comb. We are worried about those slush funds. There's billions and billions of dollars set aside for political reasons to get them through.
What are some examples here?
Well, there's 21 in total, so it would take us too long to run through all
of
them.
But
some of the the Better Regions Fund's been one of those funds that the government has routinely rorted. And there's a top-up to that fund. That's probably one example that Katie Gallagher has been talking about. But my point is really this. There's a lot of wastage in the budget. There's a lot of rorts in the budget over the last 8 years. I think the Australian people have a right to expect that we'll spend their money more responsibly. Every dollar is borrowed, and so we need to make sure we're getting maximum benefit from it.
Do you accept that the budget will at some point have to be repaired in fiscal terms? And would Labor be willing to do it if it won the election?
I think there will come a time where it would be responsible to repair the budget. But the best way to do that, and our first port of call, is to grow the economy sustainably enough that debt as a proportion of the economy comes down. That's our first priority. And one of the many missing ingredients in the budget last night was a plan for how to do that. There's an assumption that that will happen. That somehow the debt will disappear, but not a plan to do it. And I think the difference between us and the Liberals when it comes to a plan for the future is we want to genuinely grow the economy. That will require a shift in energy policy, skills and training, innovation, so we're turning our ideas into jobs. All of the things that we've been talking about that the government has largely absented the field on.
But apart from growth, would you as Treasurer have the backbone to undertake the hard decisions to repair the budget when the time came?
Yes, I think so, Michelle, and there are a number of ways to do that. I mean, let me give you one example. It is my personal view that on multinational taxes that the system can be improved to make that part of the system fairer.
But both sides have said this for years, though.
Well, I think only one side's meant it, Michelle. But there might be opportunities in there down the track. Clearly, we'll go through all the government spending as well, try and spend it more effectively. I think when it comes to debt and deficit, we've acknowledged there's a role for the budget to support jobs in the near term. I think both sides acknowledge at some point the budget will need to be repaired. I think the government will go for harsh cuts if they're re-elected. I think we'll be more responsible about it.
You'll only have mild ones.
Well, we'll go through what the government's proposed. I mean, anybody who looks objectively, as you do, Michelle, at the budget over the last 8 years, the idea that there's not waste and rorts in that budget is laughable. So there might be some opportunities for us to either wind back some of that spending or to spend it more effectively.
Jim Chalmers, thanks very much for talking with us today.
A pleasure, Michelle. Thank you.
And that's all from our politics podcast for now. Thank you to my producer, Tom Glassie. We'll be back with further interviews soon, but goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevier. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.